and welcome to episode 48 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Sydney.
Today we're talking about game burnout. What happens when you play a game so much you never want to play it again? Or maybe you're just burnt out on games altogether. Is that even possible? We'll talk about it. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show. Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. And thank you to everyone. And welcome first-time listeners. And welcome back, people who come back. And we miss you if you are not one of those people that are coming back.
We do.
That's all I'm saying about that.
They won't hear us, but, you know, maybe they'll feel our vibes.
They could feel the vibes. That's true.
Or a friend can poke them and tell them to keep listening.
Yeah. They were talking about you. What? let's see. Announcements. We have some quick ones. Our 50th episode, which is still a heated debate as to whether or not it's more important than 52. I have no feedback one way or the other, whether 50 or 52.
You've got plenty of feedback from
me. Us.
Yeah. 1 year anniversary. More important, I think. Chris is very adamant.
I think you measure in episodes.
Okay.
All right, listeners, you tell me what you think. Either way, episode 50 is coming up, and it's not going to have a topic. It's just episode 50. So we're going to talk about the last 49 episodes. Also, I want questions. I want questions that we can answer in episode 50. So to that end, we have a contest going on right now. And if you've emailed us, you are entered into our contest. If you're a patron, you're entered into our contest. If you email me with a question that I can use on episode 50, you will also get an extra entry into the contest. So if you haven't emailed yet, go ahead and email. You'll still get that entry, but add a question. You'll get some bonus entries depending on how good I think the question is, somewhere between 1 and 5 extra entries. If we use it on the air, it'll definitely be worth 5. But wow. Everyone who sends us a question will get some extra entries. The good questions are quick questions, things we can answer in like 5-10 minutes-ish. The shorter, the better, but make them fun. My favorite color is blue. I don't know any other questions someone might want to ask me. But so we're going to give away 2 games on episode 50. Plague Inc. is the first one. Arena for the Gods is the second one. You email us with the subject July giveaway. And that's email us to tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And again, throw a question in there. Get some bonus entries. Deadline is July 28th. Our episode 50 drops on June 1st, so that's when we'll announce the winner. I think that's right.
August 1st?
August 1st. Yes, August comes after July. So thank you for... There's one contest where I just announced the wrong date the entire time and no one corrected me.
But. Yeah, thank God someone's paying attention.
August 1st. And that is for our contest. If you ever have any questions about what we're giving away, because we're always giving away something, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com, click on giveaways, and we will have that information there. Convention season's coming up. Gen Con is just around the corner. We just got an email today that their Saturday badges are now sold out. So I think Gen Con is almost completely sold out except for a few family badges, which is crazy. Like, that's 70,000 plus people in one spot. If you're going to be there, we'll be there. We'll be there August 18th, 6 p.m. in the Crown Plaza. That is Pennsylvania's B, is I guess the room number. Grab tickets for that because there's only 40 seats in there and it is ticketed. It's a free ticket, but you know, to make sure you have a seat, grab a ticket for it. Kickstarters. Back on the Kickstarter bandwagon. A couple that are kind of fun. I backed a game called Action Cats. This game is kind of a Cards Against Humanity with kittens.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. You hate Cards Against Humanity.
I do, but I like kittens.
But it doesn't make any sense. You can't just slap kittens on something and suddenly it's great.
I'm just scared what they're doing to the kittens.
So think of it as kind of a G-rated Cards Against Humanity.
Okay.
So, and Cards Against Humanity, if you've not... don't know it. I don't blame you. We'll talk about burnout. That's one game that's really easy to burn out on. You have the beginning of something, and then you have the end of something. In Action Cats, every card on the back of the card has a cute little kitten. Or kitten or cat. But they're crowdfunded cats. So people are sending in their pictures of their cat. So that goes on the back of the card. On the front of the card is like a situation. And on the bottom of the card is like the beginning of a story and the end of a story. So the dealer puts down a kitten or a cat picture, and everyone else has to take two cards from their hand and put a top and bottom together to make a story. Like, I'm a secret agent, might be the top one. And I got away clean is the bottom one or something like that, because right. the cat's taking a bath. So that kind of...
Oh, I see. So it's not just like a portrait of a cat. It's like a cat in a funny situation
right.
or something interesting situation.
Exactly.
Right.
So you're trying to match the picture of the cat. So it's a very, very G-rated take on that, you know, who can make me laugh the most
sure.
with kittens and cats.
I feel like you just want this so that when non-gamers come around, you have something to play with them. As opposed to, because I still don't get it.
I'm probably going to give this away to a friend.
Gotcha. Right. Now I understand. I mean,
not that I don't like action cats or cat pictures or those sorts of things. I don't like apples to apples based games.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I was so confused. Yeah. Like, why has he spent money on this?
But
is it just out of compulsion now? Is that how bad your habits got?
So it's Keith Baker. It's right. his game that he designed, and they have a podcast called The Download, which is Andy Looney and Keith Baker.
Right.
Keith Baker does role-playing games. He did Gloom and stuff like that. So this is his Kickstarter. So I'm kind of backing it to support him, and it's only $17.
Oh, okay.
So it's really
nice.
Not
now
that,
we get the full story, and you're going to give it away as a present.
And it's actually the idea is kind of cute.
Right.
So I'm like, there are people out there that are going to love like a deck of cute pictures of cats.
Gotcha.
So they are the number one thing on the internet. Well, number two, we won't talk about
No, we won't.
But speaking of other things that are very successful and popular right now, Gloomhaven. Mm. Founders of Gloomhaven is now available on Kickstarter to
Woo-hoo!
Back. Exactly. And I've done so. I've backed it. Only $59 for this game. Isaac really likes to lower the price when he does his Kickstarters for what retail will be. But this is a tile-laying Euro game. And it's big, it's heavy, it's brainy. For the price, it's definitely worth it if you like those games. If you like the Gloomhaven universe at all, pick it up, take a look at it. If you've never heard of Gloomhaven, but you like tile-laying games, or just tiles in general, or you just trust me, get this game. This one's worth $59 unless you hate tile laying Euro style games with point calculations at the end. And we do have people that are that.
So, I'm excited for the mechanic of having a card where you can pick a top and then pick a bottom, but then you have to choose and in a different scenario.
Yep. So the cards will play differently depending on when you play them. There's voting. He's doing a whole thing on Board Game Geek right now that's like walking through all the design elements of the game. So if you go to the Founders of Gloomhaven thread, you'll see all of the different, like, why things work this way or that way. And he's getting feedback now from, you know, people. There's a print and play, which I'm actually probably going to print and play because I'm curious about it. It's 19 pages and then a whole lot of scissors, but it might be worth it. So
right. Well, you know, you can invite a few of us around and we'll help you scissor cut things up.
Yeah. And we can watch TV while we're doing it, because watching TV while cutting small things with near your fingers are perfect.
Yes.
Idea.
Yes.
And then the last one I backed was called Crusaders, Thy Will Be Done, Deluxified. This is by Tasty Mental Games. We actually saw this game at Dice Tower Con, and we were talking to, I think it was the director of marketing at the time. And they didn't have the game there, but they had the box there. Then I saw it on Kickstarter. And what got me was this message from the designer that on the Kickstarter says. So I'm going to read this. It'll be 1 minute, I promise. A while back, I heard about a brand new board game coming out that was going to be a combination of Mancala mechanisms with Rondel. Now, Mancala is a game where you're like dropping beads in a little tray and, you know, so you're trying to get the most of your colored beads. And then Rondels are kind of just like a rotary thing, if case you're the vocab. But anyway, I thought that was a brilliant and made some assumptions on how that game must work. My guess was that on your turn, you would choose an action to do, resolve that action based on the number of action tokens in that space on the rondel, the more the better. Then distribute those tokens around the rondel a la Mancala. I like that, a la Macala. This sounded fantastic, as each action would sort of grow in power until you take it. Then it would revert back to zero, and you'd have to build it back up before taking it again. I was really excited about this idea, but to my surprise, I found out that I guessed wrong. So in a weird bit of serendipity, my incorrect guess at the mechanisms ended up giving me an idea that would make up for an entirely different mechanical experience, one I thought was well worth pursuing, and that is Crusaders. So that concept is really interesting to me, where the more you use other actions, it builds up other actions on the wheel. So I use this action, that action's powerless now, but all the other actions get one stronger. And you can kind of...
I really like Mon Cala because it's basically you're trying to get the... tokens or pebbles usually, into the your little hole at the end, and so you're trying to get an exact amount, and so you're doing like a lot of math in your head as you're going, but then if you like can combo things, it's super fun.
Yeah, so and now imagine that with an action mechanic. So whenever you pulled the beads out of a particular thing, you could take an action based on how many beads you pulled out, or stones or pebbles or whatever you have been using, buttons. So I'm like, all right. And one more thing about Kickstarter. So I've been kickstarting a lot of games, and I continue to do so. There's no cure for this, to be honest. And I'm starting to get games sent to me of what I've kickstarted, which is like, great, awesome. I can start like kind of talking about these games. And this one was one I was really excited about. Demon Espionage. This is a social... Well, it's deemed as a social deduction-ish game. It plays from 2 to 6 players. And the idea here is you are either a shadow or a demon. You have to figure out what team you're on. Then you're attacking each other with kind of like a war or paper, rock, scissor mechanic. And if you win, you get to draw a point card, which they call a soul card. And if you lose... then they get to draw the soul card. If you eliminate someone completely, you get to draw a soul card and one extra card on top of that. And the cards themselves do things like, I play a 9 and you play a 7, so I win. Except I play this other card that says reverse. Okay, so there's lots of reverses. Or I play a 2 and you play a 6, but I play a card that says, no, we're using paper, rock, scissors for this one. So each number has a paper, rock, scissors kind of suit. So instead of the numbers winning, it's the paper, rock, scissors that are winning. The number of times we ran into draws, ambiguities, not sure how to play because the rules are unclear, or just generally not having any fun whatsoever at all was the entire game.
Oh, no.
It was.
Yeah.
The best thing about it is I got the deluxe version, and they came pre-sleeved. So I'm going to keep the sleeves because the sleeves are actually really good quality.
So you got some sleeves out of it.
It also made no sense not to come out as your side, as the rebels or the shadows, because if you were one, there was not much in the game that told you what everyone else was. And because it was evenly matched, there were 3 and 3, you had your team. So if you came out as one, you basically were just declaring war against the other team because it was evenly matched.
Yeah. And the game ended when everyone was eliminated but one person. So eventually, this tactics were essentially, well, I just want to attack anyone. If you're on my team, I'll attack you, then I'll draw a card. But then you can potentially get healed with other cards, so I could heal you. But I'm going to come out and say that, but then someone else is going to attack you. But I can play adders on top of that. It was just so chaotic. It would have been fine to just give everyone a 6-sided die, and then everyone roll the die, and if you have the highest roll, you get a point. It would have been as enjoyable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it was rough.
It was really painful. If you have played Demon Espionage and you disagree with me, let me know.
And Chris maybe, will tell you why you're wrong.
No, maybe I just wasn't playing it right.
Well, maybe that's true. That's very good of you.
The instructions certainly didn't let us know how to play it right.
Right.
So, all right, Josh, let's get us out of here.
Indeed. Well, let's go to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So the first one is actually from Kitty, our other co-host who is normally here and isn't today, in an email titled, Chris is Wrong. That's such a Kitty email. I scrounged together a little bit of internet to let you know how to play Taboo. What Chris described is catchphrase. Taboo has an additional list of words that you also can't use to describe the word, and, the best part, a really annoying buzzer that the other team gets the buzz if you mess up a word. Oh, that is good.
Yeah. But in my defense, catchphrase, taboo, I don't know, not categories, but these games are really, really close.
Right.
And all silly word games.
Yeah, but, you know, we can't ever miss an opportunity to pull you up and you for doing something.
Well, she emailed Tabletop Game Talks. I'm like, all right, it's going on the air.
Right, that's true. That's your rule. She does continue. I'd like to play Bananagrams with Sydney again, because I'm not sure her strategy would work, and I enjoy winning.
So, Sydney also told me that I got her strategy wrong. So, fortunately, you're right here.
So, the strategy for Bananagrams, once someone fills out their, basically their crossword with their tiles, they yell the word peel, and then everyone takes another tile, including themselves. So, even having completed a crossword structure with your tiles, you have to somehow get another random letter into your crossword. So, my strategy is more along the lines of waiting until the end to even try and complete a crossword, because completing a crossword just to yell the word peel means that you then have a new letter as well. And so if you're waiting to the end with a flexible set of words or combinations of vowels in front of you, and then the game ends when there's no more tiles you can take from the center. So if at that point you end up having something that you can put a random tile in, that's when you're most incentivized to yell peel, because you win.
Yeah. And you have all the letters in front of you that you haven't spent on other words, because you can rearrange them because you've never committed to them.
Right.
So it's actually the reverse of what Chris said. So I think Chris was saying, like, use up all your words quickly and then don't make any other more words. But I think you're saying, like, wait until you even start to make words.
Let everyone else try and yell peel and then get thrown off every time they have to take a new letter that doesn't fit into their crossword.
Nice.
All right. That's gamifying a party game. I like it. let's see. Steven Seitz emailed us 2 episodes ago. We went long last week, so we didn't actually get to his feedback. So I want to cover it now. This is on just basically kind of a question, but my game group's game of choice right now is Yokohama. The asymmetry and variability, wow, this is a hard one. Each time we play is out of this world, and the tile placement and bonus cards change every single game. Even though I have won every other time. every time. My group loves the game. Do you recommend a game that's similar that we could try? So basically, I think what Steven's asking is games that don't start the same. So every time you play, you have to think of a new strategy. There's new scoring. There's new something. I know one for sure that Sydney's probably thinking of right now.
Which one? Because I am. I'm thinking Terraforming Mars, because if you start with the optional companies or whatever it is that you can
corporations,
then you have basically a different goal to go towards. But that's just a slight difference from the base game where you don't have those.
Yeah. I was thinking Dominion.
Ooh, yeah.
Because Dominion, the board changes every single time.
Absolutely.
Especially once you start getting the expansions. You never have to play the same cards twice in a row.
Mm-hmm.
With all the expansions, you can probably play 30 games without using the same cards.
Very true.
So that's a completely broken up place. And by the same designer, Temporum, which is a kind of time travel game where the board is generated by putting cards down, and then you play based on just the 1, 2, 6, 7?
Yeah, well.
6, 10 cards. 10 yeah. cards form the board, and then you're moving your little worker among those different pieces, trying to move your crowns down the thing. Also, Cosmic Encounters, I think that game, because the alien races, which there are almost 200 different ones, all with unique mechanics, is a great asymmetric game and starts out differently. Now, the play is about the same, but the way the races interact is just can be so completely different that it's a new game every time. And then Smash Up, I think, is a pretty good one, too. There's lots, like the base game, you wouldn't have a lot of variability, but as you add the expansions, what Smash Up is you take 2 different decks of 20 cards, you shuffle them together, and then you have a deck of 40 cards. And each of those 20 card decks is based on a theme, like robots and unicorns. So now I'm playing the robot unicorn deck. So that can add a lot of asymmetricness in there. But I like this question, and I think I may promote it to an entire topic of games that are different every single time you set them up. You know, everything will play out a little differently as you go for most games, but if every time you set it up, it's basically a different you know, board that you have to analyze. Those kinds of games are really cool, but I need to do a deeper research on that. He also saw you on the Dice Tower Live stream when we were down there.
That was fun.
Yeah. I think he emailed us right away saying that he was like watching you on the Dice Tower Live thing.
Well, I had a really easy question. I had a question. What kind of animal would you ride if you could ride an animal? Well, some of the other people had questions that were much tougher. So,
yeah, she was afraid that they were going to ask a Dice Tower question.
A very specific question about maybe like their personalities or something like that, where I would have had to be like, oh, I'm knowledgeable on that subject.
Yeah, yeah. I've come here and I knew nothing about you.
I wasn't knew all the answers, but no, you made a very good, well, you said kangaroo.
Kangaroo. Right?
Yep.
That's a great one.
Yeah. So the game was called Z or Spice. And so what it was Z Garcia and Sam
Healy,
yes. They were on opposite teams, and then they had guests on there, and you had to, it was kind of like a Family Feud where you weren't allowed to guess the number one answer. The number one answer would give points to the other team.
Right.
Unless you did a challenge and won the challenge, then you could keep it. But the challenge was like, you know, pulling blocks from a giant Jenga thing without knocking it over, and you had to like roll a six-sided die, and like that's how many blocks you had to pull. Nice. Or playing Pie Face, or there was another one with like a water hat thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Z or Spice, when you won, you got to choose a figure of Z, which was like a promo figure for Rum and Bones, or a little spice pack. And it was a running joke of whether or not people would choose the figure over the spice. And yeah, because apparently his promo figure didn't do very well because it was Rum and Bones, which is not the most popular Cool Mini or Not game. But the very first time, this was at Origins, it was Z or Die, which was like this little six-sided die, but they ran out of dice during that game. So instead of Z and dice, they did Z and spice. So that's the full story for Nobody Cares. All right, Josh, save us. Let's get out of here.
In this episode, we're talking about game burnout. What causes it? Is it permanent? Should we look to avoid playing a game too much just so we don't get burnt out on it? Let's see if we can avoid getting burnt out on talking about burnout.
We'll see. I got burnt out on talking about Z. So yeah, burnout. It happens to the best of us. And the BGG thread on this was fantastic. I actually want to start with the thread because I think the thread itself is like adds a whole lot of like context to this. Let's see here. Christy, by the way, Christy, thank you so much. I haven't played Raxan yet, but I've signed up on the website and I'm going to. Christy knows what I'm talking about.
It's like some online game, right?
It is. All right, now I have to answer the question.
You do.
So Christy sent us a game called Raxan, which is a plaid hat game. And apparently you can only get it by somebody referring you to it who already has an account and has already registered of Raxan. So it's like a zombie co-op game.
But it is a board game.
It is a board game.
But it's so exclusive. So you have to be referred by someone who has the game?
Yes. So someone either has to get it for you or you have to refer them to it. And you can only refer three people.
Okay, but hang on. Because I see an actual box in front of us
with
Raxan on it. But you're also saying it's on the iPad or something.
No. You have to go to the computer to buy it. So you can only buy it through the Raxan website.
Right.
But you can only buy it through that website if you have a referral code of someone who is already registered on the website.
That's so VIP.
I know. And so when you play the game, you like submit your results and that will tell you how well your particular region is doing in fighting the zombies that are attacking.
Ooh, it's almost a bit like Ingress in Pokemon Go, like geolocation
in a board game form. Right. Wow. Yes. So Chrissy sent it and I will probably end up doing a contest where my three referrals will go to three listeners.
That's
but
a good idea.
I have to play it a few times first because that way I know exactly how valuable these referrals are. But anyway, Chrissy mentions, let's see, burns out on games if she has had the app version, which I think is a really interesting thing. If you have the app version, you can play it a lot more times. She said that happened with Agricola. She played it so much times that she kind of like just burnt out on the game, never wanted to play the physical copy. And for a game like Potion Explosion, she's just avoiding the app altogether. Where I went the other way, I didn't get the board game, I got the app, but...
Yeah, I mean, that can go either way, because I think some games, and we've talked about this before, lend themselves better to the app version. You know, if there's a game that's great fun to play, the mechanics are brilliant, but it's so fiddly, there's so many pieces, the setup's so difficult, suddenly the app version, it's like, great, I can play this, I don't have to, like, pull out all this stuff. So I think it can go either way. It really depends on the game and the person, I guess.
Yeah, well...
And if the app version adds more mechanics or more to do with it, like the Splendor app, you can play Splendor in not actually the game form for hours and hours and hours on the app, and then not be burnt out in the actual game itself.
Yes, they're challenges. Yeah, I that's the one board game I play quite a lot on my app. And I found that it's really nice having a game like that. It's very simple, very, very easy core rules. But it's great for like... big long journeys. Like if I'm on a train or a bus going a few hours, it's a great way to pass the time. And so far, I haven't actually burnt out on it. And I don't know whether that's just because I love the game that much, or maybe I'm the kind of person that can play games just over and over and over and not get burnt out. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, for me, like something like Potion Explosion, for example, that one I think is actually a better game in person. There's the marbles and the tactile and all that. And the app does a great job, but it doesn't feel as fun a game when I'm playing it in the app form.
It's so much fun to watch the marbles like actually come down the slots and to hear them like find their slots in the actual physical thing.
Yep. But for that one, I don't think I'm burned out on it. Lords of Waterdeep, however, when that game came out, I played it over and over and over. I probably played two games a day of Lords of Waterdeep. I play a game on the way to work on the train and on the way back. And since I started doing that, I can't play the board game anymore. And I don't play Lord of Waterdeep on the app anymore either. It's like, all right, I'm done. Played out. So I think the more plays you can get, and if apps accelerate that, it definitely accelerates burnout. She says also short-term burnout for multiple games played in a row. This happens to me quite frequently. We have a couple games on the table right now. Spyfall. This is a game that you play like 8 or 9 times in a row. And after the third or fourth one, I really just want to say, no, I'm done. But then you're this spoils for you're like sitting out. It's like,
right. Cause it's a party game.
Yeah. And so I can get burned down on that pretty quick. Werewolf, that one was, you play a lot of those games in a row and you play them late, and that's a whole nother story. We'll get to that in a second. What do you guys think about games that are like repetitive, like you've played multiple times in a row? Do you get burned out when you do that?
For me, it's if there's something I can memorize, yes. If there's not something I can memorize, no. So for me, something like Spyfall, I don't know who the spy is, and each time we play, there's going to be a different... Well, hopefully if you do it right, there's going to be a different place that you are trying to guess. But if you're playing a game that is, you have different combos of things to make and the best combos always work every time, playing that multiple times in a row would not be as appealing to me.
And that's interesting because I think that can also be maybe more specific to each player, can have different types of games that they burn out more, because it sounds like, you know, those social games often you won't burn out on. But, you know, I think Chris, you're probably more likely to burn out on a social game much quicker than Sydney is, right?
Yeah. Well, and Chrissy goes on saying for like when you're playing at a con or something, you can get burned out. She basically states there's two types of energy. There's that social energy and that strategic energy. Strategic energy, I actually can keep that up pretty easily. Social energy, though, is a lot harder, because if you're constantly having to socialize, and sometimes you just need a break, you need to step away from the intensity of these social games, especially the social deduction games where they're very accusatory, very emotionally involving.
Yes. You know, yeah, it's not just that you're socializing. You are, that intensity is like you are almost like aggressively, you know, attacking and defending against all these people who are maybe accusing you.
Yep. And you need to step away and take a break from that. And she mentions that, you know, if you have your mind can only, that strategic knowledge you have or strategic energy you have, it's like, okay, I just can't look at this puzzle anymore that's in front of me of how to maximize the points in this particular point salad game. I need a break from that. I need to go play a non-game like Codenames so that I can just like not think. Although I guess Codenames is a lot of thinking too. It's just really quiet thinking. I don't know. code names, which is another game that I've burned out on that I can't play anymore.
Yeah, but I see, that's the thing. I just think, you know, it's that person. You have that personality where, you know, you have that strategic energy much more than the social one. I mean, me and Sydney were playing social deduction games until like 6, 7 a.m. some days at Origins. And we were quite happy to do that. But you were like, okay, it's 2 a.m.
And with the same people and sometimes with the same roles. And so you might even get the same role over the course of a night, but you're just, it's different every time. And the social energy kind of feeds into the strategic energy if it's exciting.
Yeah. And I was like, even when I'm playing multiple games in a night, oftentimes the game will end. So we're talking things like Werewolf, where you have a group of people and it's right down to the wire who wins. Or in this year's case, Witch Hunt. So you have some extra roles in there as well. As soon as we're done, you guys are like, oh, we want to play again, I'm like, I've just spent an hour and a half like
yelling
in emotional turmoil. No, I don't want to play again. I want to go like take a walk and, you know, just kind of recharge. It's not that I was upset about the game or anything like that. It's just like, I need to breathe so that I can come back in fresh. Because otherwise it's just like, my nerves are on edge.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you guys were like, nope, let's play again. Let's play again.
Well, a social game that actually I have quite burned out on is Cards Against Humanity, and maybe for possibly a different reason than you might think. And it kind of feeds into what I was saying earlier. It's not that you can memorize combinations, but some of the funnier combinations of the base set are done over and over and over again. And if something is less funny than what that might be, it will never win. And so I might have seen something so many times that when it comes up, oh, I know the best answer to this already.
Well, and even if also, I don't have it. Its funniness wears off.
Absolutely.
Right? It's just not as funny anymore. It might even be the best version for new people. But for you, it's like, eh, that's old hat. That's not funny anymore. Mm-hmm. That's like the classic answer to this one.
Well, it does lead to one of Terrence's questions. So he actually posted a couple of questions. Does it count as burnout if you never really enjoyed the game in the first place? And so I don't know if I'm burnt out on Cards Against Humanity or I've just always thought of it as a non-game. Like, to me,
that's a good point.
I don't think it's a game. It's not enjoyable. It's not fun. It's something you do when you have a group of people together and most of the people there don't actually want to play a real game. But they'll play Cards Against Humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I just don't see it as a game. And it's certainly not something to be like, oh, I have this great game. Want to play Cards Against Humanity. Or probably even Action Cats. Although that one has a cuteness quality that I could get away with once or twice just because it's kittens. So you can pretty much get away with. It's kind of the shock value in Cards Against Humanity.
Right.
The first time you play it, it's like, okay, you're going to snicker a little bit.
This is so inappropriate.
Right. Yeah. But so I don't know. I don't know that it counts if you never really enjoyed the game.
That's a fantastic point because I actually sometimes have to think about that when I think about Pandemic because it's not a game that I've necessarily played so many times, but I have played it quite a bit. And as a co-op game, I'm not necessarily as fond of it, but I choose not to play it again because I don't think I would enjoy playing it again. And I think he's right. I think that kind of falls a little bit into my style of game as much as how many times I've played it before.
Yeah. Well, Todd mentions, kind of in a similar vein, talks about Seven Wonders and how it's hard to burn out with a cult of the new group, but Seven Wonders was one of the games that they would play a lot. And he didn't really care for the game in the beginning, so he wasn't sure really if he burned out on it or not, but he definitely didn't necessarily enjoy it. But one thing he's mentioned is that it plays up to 7 players, so if you have a big group, it works. Although I will argue that Seven Wonders is not a 7-player game. It's a 3-player game that you can play simultaneous 3-player games at once. But that's beside the point. He adds, which I find also interesting, what would be the opposite of burnout? I feel like I have that with Race for the Galaxy. I've played 400 to 500 times in person, mostly against his nemesis, who logs plays, so apparently they have record of this, and probably 10 times versus Keldon's AI, which is like an AI, so you can play a single player. Still showing no signs of stopping. Seems to be an exception to the previous paragraph about playing apps and having apps be burnout. He says he wins about 50% of the time, but still loves to play. And, you know, what about a game that you just can't burn out on?
I think there's quite a few. I mean, he hints at, I think, the reason, my theory anyway, as to why these games can be so addictive and so sort of never-endingly fun, is that these deep strategy games, let's say chess as an example, Homeworlds as an example, a game I used to play that was very risk-like was Warlight Online. And really your opponents are, you're versing someone else, but the strategy is so deep and so complex that it's almost never ending in terms of how much you can learn. There's such a half-life in terms of this your skill level progression. Like, you are never going to become the perfect player, chess player, ever. That just doesn't exist. And so there's always another little increment that you can get better and someone else who's better to beat. And that's, if you like to kind of measure your own intelligence or your own strategy skills, like, that's such an addictive thing. I remember when I was playing that Warlight game, there was like a community of maybe 200 people who were on the leaderboard. And so you'd get to know people's styles of play. You'd play them multiple times. And so you'd be like, oh, okay, now I'm playing this person. And it really got me into the idea of how it must be for sort of chess grandmasters sort of grinding their way up the ranks. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm now a level, you know, I'm in the top 100 of the world. Okay, now I'm aiming for these guys who are just above me. And like, how am I going to up my game and really kind of change my strategy and learn from those people to become like the very best?
But why did you stop playing?
Well, it wasn't because I didn't like the game anymore. It was more like things in my life took over
priorities.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like, and also it was so, partly it was so addicting is why I stopped. It was like, I was spending so much time on it that I was like, I can't play this game anymore. Cause I'm all in or nothing. Like, I'm going to play this game like hours and hours a week. So I should just not play it at all.
Huh. I wonder if quitting cold turkey is a form of burnout. Like, it's kind of a imposed burnout, saying, I want to play the game, but I can't. So therefore, I'm done. I'm done playing.
Yeah, no and more. It might be partly my personality as well. Like, you know, some people, and I think I'm like this, I can eat the same thing for lunch for like a month at least, or maybe more. And like, Gloria, my significant other, she could not do that. Like, she's the complete opposite. She's like, no, like, I want to have something different, like, every single day. And I love variety in life. Like, I like doing new things. But when it comes to like certain things, like food or a game that I really enjoy, I'm okay with eating that same thing again. It's just nice, you know, to not have to think about, okay, what am I going to eat today? Which other place am I going to go to today? It's like, oh, it's over there.
You found it. It's good. It works every time.
Exactly.
Which is funny because Sydney will play the same game over and over, but won't eat two bananas in a day.
You can't eat the same thing twice in a day. It's a thing.
You can't. It's a rule of the universe, Chris.
But speaking of a game that is the opposite of burnout, when I was addicted to Dominion at one point, where I owned every single expansion and I played it regularly, and it also, because as we mentioned before, it changes every time you play. So depending on the cards that would come out, you would have to come up with a new strategy. And so the coming up with the strategy would be a very important part of the game. And so that I could play over and over and over again. And I even got to the point where I was playing it at work online. I was playing it on a Isotropic, and then Isotropic actually was shut down by the designer, and it was all on good terms. They were creating their own online version, but that's actually when I decided to give it the boot, because I was playing it so much that I couldn't move over to the new website and then start paying for it. And I felt like this was a good time to just let it go.
So I've just realized what the opposite to burnout is. It's addiction.
It's addiction. Well, we answered that question.
That's good.
Other reasons for burnout. Caleb mentioned Star Wars Imperial Assault. He burned out on this game because when he played his friend, they would be such a lopsided game that it just wasn't enjoyable. So he'd play again and it'd be super lopsided. Play it again, super lopsided. Sometimes he wouldn't even, you know, finish the game because like, okay, I can't win. So, and then finally it's just like, I'm done. I can't play this game anymore. And I think that is a good way. So when you're talking about like working up the ladder for the chess ladder and things like that, at a certain point, it's just so lopsided, you're not going to make any more progress.
Right.
Now, chess is a little different if you have the entire suite of the world to play from, because there's always someone at your level.
Yes.
But if it's you and two other people, and those two other people are way better than you, you're going to burn out on that game very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been like that for me with this Warlight game. It was the fact that there was an online community and I could play the people at my level, like you're saying, and then progress up to the people just above me and just above me again, yep. or go back down if I hadn't played in a while. But you're right. If I'd been playing, I love to win. And I know Kitty's like this, and I think you're like this, Sydney, as well. But like, I really do love to win in those deep strategy games. So if I had felt like I had no chance of winning, yeah, I'd be like, I don't want to play this. In fact, whenever I play Gloria at Scrabble, that's exactly what happens. She yep. stomps all over me. And that's why I don't want to play a big part of it. Like, if there was someone that was very similar to me in Scrabble, I'd probably be interested in playing.
Yeah. This is an interesting way to think of, like, different ways of burning out. I think, you know, I get burned out on social games that are relatively short and just over and over and over repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Codename, Spyfall, even Werewolf to a certain extent, although I can play Werewolf now in small stints. So I think this Origins, I might have played 4 or 5 games,
mm-hmm.
where in previous Origins, I played probably, you know, 20 games. And now it's like, okay, I can enjoy it. But in moderation. I don't want to play. I don't have to play.
Reformed addict.
Exactly. actually, huge tangent. I listened to, I think it was either a podcast or a book or something on alcoholics. Right. No, it was a This American Life on alcoholics and people who think they're alcoholics, but they're not actually alcoholics.
Oh, I remember hearing that episode. She was like the poster woman of AA.
Adolescent, yeah.
Yeah, and she had this whole story. And then later in life, she found out, you know, someone, kind of therapist or someone, revealed to her, oh, you know, isn't the signs of an addict.
You talk about being addicted, but did you ever actually drink?
And was it a compulsion for you?
And so she went back and she started drinking and just like trying it out. She's like, yeah, I don't feel compelled to keep doing this. So if you're an alcoholic, by all means, you know I don't. But I think it's interesting that when you are addicted to something, that addiction can go away and you can moderate it. Now, physical, chemical, there's obviously addiction things that don't go away. But right. I think when we're talking board games, it's safe to say that if you're addicted to Warlight, if you were to go back and start playing it now, would that same level of addiction happen?
Yeah,
could you moderate it as you went back?
Yeah, actually, when I really got addicted to it, I had a lot of free time. And I think that's part of why I got so addicted to it, because I started to get really good. And so that was part of it. You know, I was like, oh, I'm one of the few people who are right up the top of the leaderboard. So I agree. I think if I have now I have less time, like I probably wouldn't be as good and I probably wouldn't be that into it.
I used to do that with online role-playing games. I played Final Fantasy XI for 2.5 years, solid.
Right.
And suddenly one day I just like, all right, I don't have time for this anymore. Yeah. And I still have my account. And occasionally I'll go back and log in, but I'm like, it just doesn't feel the same. Like I'm done with this.
Was it burnout that stopped you?
It was kind of life, but also you get to a certain point where you kind of open your eyes and be like, I could be doing something different.
Hmm.
And then you just go do something different. And then it's just not there anymore. You know, that same feeling isn't there. And again, kind of circling it back to games, I think we can kind of do the same thing there. You know, if I look at Lords of Waterdeep, I really, really enjoy that game. But I don't get that same feeling anymore when the game gets set up. I don't see it as like, oh, I can't wait to play this. It's like, I've done this.
Right.
I had that feeling. I can't get that feeling back of this new shiny thing. I don't know.
It is strange because I think there, you know, for you, you're very much the cult of the new. But then there does seem to be a few games like the Wards of Waterdeep where you have found something that you will play again and again, which is, I think, quite rare for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of games that I will play anytime. Just name it and I'll play it. Homeworlds is one of them. But even Homeworlds, I'm not playing as often because I think Sydney's kind of burnt out on it.
A little bit.
So because she is, I don't have someone to play.
Right.
But if someone said, want to play Homeworlds, I'd be like, yeah, let's play. I'm just not burnt out on that one yet.
Well, one of the things about Homeworlds is in a deeply strategic game, just like you were talking about before, if you get to a level where you're really good and you're on someone else's level, but then you don't play it for a while, you do lose some of that. And so you have to keep at it and continue to improve yourself. Right. And so, I mean, I guess at this point, because we both haven't played it in a while, we could improve ourselves by playing it against each other. But I feel like I've lost some of the nuance of remembering that certain things in the game have to be kept in the back of your mind. And there are a lot of those things. And so I guess burnout to me includes the losing of the nuance of the strategy of a game.
Yeah, I can see that. I personally, I like relearning that stuff, like refiguring it out. But that's just how my mind works. We talked about before. It's like I learn by understanding things, so trying to work it out in my head to get to the solution, as opposed to remembering things. So I might make a mistake in Homeworld, but it's just I didn't remember that I shouldn't do that. Learn my lesson. Now I'll know for the next game that I play, whenever that happens to be. Yeah. Another, Michael mentions burning out on, burnt out on Dominion and Seasons by playing too much online. So this is another just overly playing it. And he's taken that as a cautionary tale, though, where he doesn't allow himself to play any games too much, because he doesn't want to burn out on those games. So you might play twice in a day, but never more than twice in a week or something like that. So just kind of spread it out, you know, moderate yourself.
That's interesting. Yeah, kind of like knows that that's a thing and kind of keeps himself away from it. Huh.
Yeah. And I think Sam emailed us. He mentioned Flux and Munchkin. Two very, very easy games to sit down and play. Also, very easy to burn out on, because they are kind of the same thing over and over and over. And I know a lot of people who played Flux who say Flux is terrible. It's not really. It's just really easy to get past the point of interest in it, so you're no longer interested in what's going on. Although I will say, try Math Flux and Chemistry Flux. Those are really cool variations of Flux. And Munchkin is just a straight up take that game, which can become socially exhausting as well.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I played like a take that game. Oh, actually it was, Ginger Dead House. That was the last take that game I played. But yeah, it is very, I don't know, if you're the kind of person who's a bad loser, you could get burnt out on those kind of games very easily, because I gave it as a gift to Gloria's 12-year-old niece, and I was a little bit worried about giving her this as a gift. I was like, well, she's 12 years old and I know she likes to win, and I like, is she going to be a bad loser? I literally had to ask her parents, like, look, it's this type of game, is she going to handle it? And they're like, no, it's fine. So I was a bit reticent too. So I think you've got to keep that in mind, especially if you're giving a gift or something, like, take that game. Some people just really don't like them. I don't know if it was Kitty or was it you, Sydney, who doesn't like Munchkin?
Oh, I'm not a fan of Munchkin whatsoever. I honestly think that in take that games, the strategy is to always be the second player, the second person all the way up to the end. Then the person who's in first place then gets removed because everyone uses their cards and
gang up on them in the second place.
Exactly. Yep. So there's a strategy to it. I just don't like those kinds of games.
Yeah. Well, and those types of games are a lot of smack talk.
Mm-hmm.
So Sydney's an only child, so she does not know like
how, you know,
people giving each other crap as kind of an endearing thing.
Yeah.
So in a game that like emphasizes that, I can see how that immediately would be a turnoff. It's like, nope, I'm out of here. I don't understand why you guys are so mean to each other, type of thing. It's all in good fun.
As long as it is actually in good fun.
Yeah. Sam actually mentions the Core 4, which I've never heard of this before, but it makes total sense. Core 4, Carcassonne, Dominion, Ticket to Ride, and Settlers of Catan. Those are these four kind of quintessential gateway games.
What about Monopoly?
That's not a gateway game. That's just a mass market game.
It's just an old game that all serious gamers hate.
Yes. But these four games tend to be games that people burn out on, especially like, you know, gamers, quote unquote gamers. But he also mentions that oftentimes if you go back to play those games, you will enjoy them. And he does enjoy them. It's just you've played it so many times, you'd rather play anything else But if you do play it, it's still fun.
So it's about perception as well. It can also be just about how your mind feels about that game. Actually, if you went and played that game, you'd be all right because enough time's passed. But you assume in your mind, like, no, I'm burnt out in this game. I can't possibly have fun playing it anymore.
Yep.
It has actually been years since I've played a game of Settlers of Catan because I felt that way exactly. It was the game to play for so long that, like, I got all of my friends to play it multiple times and I put it down and didn't pick it up again.
Yeah. But I bet you if we set it up right now, we would play it and we would have a good time with it. Like, it would not be the game we jump to.
Yeah.
But if we played it, and I think that might apply to all Burnout games. Like, I don't like, I can't imagine saying, hey, let's play a game of Codenames. There's just, it's not compelling to me. It doesn't draw me in. But once they're on the table and I have to start thinking of clues to give people, I'm in it. Like, I'm like playing that game and I really enjoy it.
I want you to keep this in mind next time I want to play Mysterium.
Okay, so Mysterium and Dixit, we should talk about those games. They're great games for about 5 playthroughs. And then they're not anymore.
Why?
So have you played Mysterium or Dixit?
I have played Mysterium.
Okay. So both of them have art cards. And essentially it's one person that's trying to say something about the art in limited ways. Dixit, you're trying to make people guess your card, but you don't want everyone to guess your card because if everyone guesses your card, you don't get any points. But if nobody guesses your card, you don't get any points. So there's like this kind of abstract arty things and you say something that makes people choose those cards. Mysterium is a very, very similar. You're trying to solve the mystery by putting out different cards that are trying to convey information. Well, the art the first time through are interesting and cool, and you're looking at it. The second time through is like, okay, I get it. This person was trying to use the red umbrella in this picture to symbolize this, so they're probably doing the same thing this time to symbolize that. Like, oh, nope, they were using the orange rabbit in this picture this time. So you kind of go through a few times, and the cards become their own meanings, per se, or you're making assumptions to it. Your mind goes to certain places that you can't get it away from.
It sounds like the problem with Cards Against Humanity, you know, it's essentially like, oh, this has become old hat.
Right.
You know, like we've seen these pictures before. Everyone kind of uses this information to go towards this picture. I guess those games are kind of heavily geared towards having lots and lots of expansions because that's your way to get around that problem is if you're constantly buying the new Cards Against Humanity, then hopefully it will be fun for your gaming group to continue to play that if you're not Chris.
Right. But so I don't know. I just think they're limited play games. And there's plenty of limited play games out there. Pandemic Legacy is a limited play game. And when we got to the end, we played, I think, 16 games of that. I was ready to be done. It was certainly enjoyable. And I look back at it and I remember it fondly. And I'm looking forward to season 2. But I have no need to go back and play season 1 again.
But yeah, but it had a fixed narrative. I mean, it's kind of like, for me, like watching a movie. Like, I hardly ever go back and watch a movie again. And part of that is because the narrative has been revealed to me and the mystery. And part of the joy of it is that that not knowing and being surprised and delighted along the way. And a lot of games can bring that to the table. And Pandemic Legacy, obviously, with its story arc that you reveal as you go along, has that element. And there's other ways that games can provide that element other than just like having a storyline. But you are always moving towards the end of that narrative arc. And so you were always being surprised and delighted. And you're right. Once you had finished that, it's done. And it was designed that way. But I think the core mechanic would work again with just something else. Like we could play some other sort of legacy type game with an arc and it changes every time. And it could still be interesting and fun.
Yeah. So what else? What else has you burning out on games? We've talked about, you know, differences in skill levels. We've talked about, you know, just exhaustion because of social, you know, maybe for Dixit and Mysterium, just kind of limited play ability for a game. And that's not just those. There's a lot of games that once you've played it a few times, you're like, okay, I get everything I'm going to get out of this game. I don't need to play it again.
Like, to be completely honest, there's an aspect of setup time and cleanup time that if I love a game, but to set it up will take a very long amount of time and cleaning it up takes a long amount of time. I can be burnt out on that and not the actual game itself.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's one of the reasons why when I put games away, I put them away to make it easy to set up later, regardless of how long it takes me to put it away. Because at the end of a game, I got to put it away anyway, right? So right. It's like, and I'm there, I'm in the game, like it's just gotten done. I feel good about it. But if I don't, if it's going to take me 45 minutes to set it up the next time, I'm not going to pull that game out.
So that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, people need to keep that in mind and maybe follow your example of putting games away in that way. I know you did a few videos, didn't you, of like how to put things away, particular games away in such a way that it'll be so easy to set them up.
Yeah. Again. Great Western Trail is a great example. Like if we didn't have an easier time of setup for that game, it would be a bit of a process that I wouldn't look forward to in setting up that game, whereas setting it up is super easy, even though cleaning it up takes a bit longer.
Yep. And but I have more people to clean up. At the end of the game, I have, you know, three or four people to help me clean it up, where setting it up, especially if I'm teaching people how to play it, they can't really help me set it up. So that those are the types of things that I look at too. But I think that's a really good point, because there are games like Twilight Imperium. I've never even played the game, but I'm burnt out on the idea of setting it up.
Yeah.
Because there's so much in that box that I have to worry about where it goes and what happens and what goes where. Plus, I know I have to get people to play it for 6 hours, and it's best played with six people. There's a lot of reasons, I guess. One of these days, I will play it. It will happen, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've touched on quite a few ways in which you max out on something. I think, you know, it's like with Pandemic Legacy, it's the content. You know, you've gone through the content and you've maxed out on that. You don't want to play it again because you know what's going to come. But with something like, I know it's not a board game, but it's Pokemon Go, it's the content, you know, like the idea is catch them all. And if you've caught them all and you're the strongest in your town or whatever, and you've leveled up to the max level, then you're kind of, you've lost the goals that you had. Like, yeah. Oh, I want to be level 30, or I want to catch, you know, 200 Pokemon and have them all maxed out evolutions.
That's a really good question. And is it a distinction? So we're playing Gloomhaven right now.
Right.
And Gloomhaven has a story. It has a number of scenario. It has unlockables. And we're about, you know, maybe a third to halfway through the scenarios.
Right.
We're probably 3/4 of the way through the unlockable characters. Once we've unlocked everything, and once we've completed the main storyline, if we stop playing, are we burnt out, or have we just finished it? Kind of like Pandemic.
Yeah.
Pandemic, we didn't get burnt out. We just stopped playing.
It's not the mechanic. It's not the mechanic of the game you don't like. It's more the content that you've kind of finished.
Right.
I will say, though, for Gloomhaven, although I will never burn out on it because it's a fantastic game, the actual characters themselves that we unlock, I've gotten to the point where I'm near unlocking another character, and my cards are basically useful in a specific combination for specific ways, and I know what I'm going to do in a certain order. And that's, for me, that's that memorization thing again. So when I'm close to unlocking a new character, I'm slightly burnt out on the one that I'm currently playing, but I know that there's a new one to achieve, so I keep going.
But what if there wasn't? What if, like, nope, this is your last character. There is no retirement for this character.
Well, what's great about Gloomhaven is that you can then pick up an old character.
You could switch.
And then play it from the beginning, or play it from the level that you're at. And that's one of the things that it makes it so you can't ever be at the end of your rope with nothing left.
Interesting. Like, I can't say I will never burn out on it. I'm certainly enjoying it, but I enjoy the unlockable, the discovery pieces of it. Once everything's unlocked, I'm not sure that I'll keep playing it. But again, I don't think I'll be burnt out on it. I think it'll just be, okay, I'm done with the discovery here. I'm going to move to something else. And maybe that's fundamentally my personality type, is I'm always wanting to discover new things. So a game that has a lot of like things to discover within it, I can play much longer before I'm done with it. And a game that doesn't, such as Codenames or Spyfall, where really, yes, there may be lots of different combinations and things like that, but ultimately the discovery of the game itself is relatively limited, I'm going to burn out on those a whole lot faster, because the game has given me everything it can give me, and now it's time for me to move on. So where, Sydney, you like playing the same games over and over. You don't play games to discover the things. You play games for the act of playing that specific game.
Well, also, I think the things that you're discovering, if you like playing those types of games is more the variability and the anecdote of those particular rounds. You know, like me and Sydney will always remember being up at 6 a.m. playing Witch Hunt in the Deception Room at Origins because of how that particular round played out. And it was so unique to that one time. And I think even with something like Spyfall, okay, it's not as complex and not as interactive, but it could still be like, oh, remember that one time we played Spyfall and our friend said that ridiculous clue or, you know, gave themselves away in that ridiculous way. And that's the thing you're discovering is like, it's always different socially.
Yeah. You know? And if you haven't played Spyfall, we should probably explain it because we've mentioned it a zillion times. Spyfall, everyone receives a picture of a location. There are 26 locations or something like that in the book that you can have a spread so you can see all the possible locations. But everyone gets a picture of one location, so you all get the same picture, except for one person gets a spy card. And then each person asks somebody a question, and then that person will answer any way they want, and then that person gets to ask a question. And it just keeps going around until a timer goes up, and then, or if the spy figures out the location that's being talked about. So your question would be, like, if it's a picture of a ski slope, I might say, how's the weather outside, Josh? And he could say...
Sunny.
Okay, so that doesn't eliminate the fact that he could be at a ski slope, but it doesn't give a whole lot of information because there's lots of sunny locations. So as the spy, I don't have a lot of information. So those types of things are the types of questions you're asking. And eventually you get around and you're trying to figure out who the spy is, and the spy is trying to figure out what the location is, and that's Spyfall. And it plays in about 10 minutes, and you can play 10 games in an evening without much work at all, and it just goes on forever at a certain point.
When we play, we try to, every time that we use a location, we take that stack of locations out of the option pool. So at about a handful of locations in, our option pools are getting much smaller, so it's easier for the spy to guess where we're at, but we also don't want to play a location we've already played because that would make the game less fun to play again in the same evening.
Yep. So, and if you, once you take out five or six, you really have to shuffle them back in, but you can take out a few, but again, that helps the spy a little bit. So anyway, those are the kinds of games I'm not huge fans of anymore. I loved playing Spyfall when we first started playing it. I just have no need to go back to it.
Sure.
So, and I think that's what you really have to do to burn out on something. You have to love it to start with before you can really burn out on it.
Definitely.
So anything else to add to this conversation?
No.
I'm burnt out.
All right. Me too. Okay. So as always, thank you, everyone. Thanks all of our patrons. If you want to be a patron, you can find out more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Remember, all of our patrons get automatically entered in any of our giveaways. And that means you don't have to email us if you don't want to. But if you email us for questions, you will get extra entries. Also, thank you for everyone who reviews us on iTunes. That really helps us out in making us look, you know, distinguished and whatnot on the podcasting places. We haven't gotten a review all this month.
Whoa.
I know. It makes me a little sad. Somebody go out and review us just to make me happy. That's a good reason, right?
Yeah.
I think so. And otherwise, we look forward to having Kitty back. Not next week, I don't think. I think it's the week after. I think she's coming back for the 50th episode, which is reason enough to celebrate. next week, though, we may have her sister on. So we'll find out. If everything is on schedule, that's what's going to happen. If it's not, Sydney, you might be coming back next week.
We'll woohoo!
All right, Josh, take us out.
Well, thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so consider leaving us an iTunes review, email us with comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all our patrons, Emil Giljam, Shane Poole, George, Adam Harrison, Sal from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, and Jennifer Engelbrecht. Until next week, when we talk about board game parties, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Thank you. I'm not going to burn out on Patreon names. I'm just going to keep making that list longer and longer.
Well, no one's ever going to burn out on my beautiful accent.